This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Friends, this is episode number 98 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
So I just discovered that yesterday was a neat little holiday called Opening Day. Yes. And I'm guessing that that's a magic-themed holiday where, like, we all just, like, open our packs and, like, share the neat things that we opened. Am I doing this right? Like,
I think that should be a holiday.
It was okay because I saw it trending and I was like, oh, how great is this? I was like, everybody's opening their magic cards and I was waiting for like pictures and videos and then it never happened. But a lot of people were talking about baseball. Mm-hmm. So maybe they didn't like what they pulled. Like, I don't really know what's going on there. But I understand that you guys, you enjoy the games. I saw you and Hallie, Chris and Hallie, I saw you two kind of tweeting at each other and encouraging your teams on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I love the baseball. I haven't gotten a chance to watch the Mets play yet, though they've been running tons of ads for opening day on like ESPN and all the big sports networks. And, there was this one where they were like doing a montage of like all these different baseball players. And like, there's this frame where you just see like the four main pitchers for the Mets just like sitting around a table eating dinner together and like looking really fierce, like staring at the camera. And I was just like, I want that. Like, I want to just like put that on my wall and also like buy a copy of it and like send it to Brian David Marshall because I'm sure he would want it too.
And Chris, did your opening day go the way that you wanted it to? Because you were pretty passionate on Twitter.
Well, it was opening day, but Cubs were at Cardinals, so they were in St. Louis. Unfortunately, opening day at Wrigley is not until April 10th. So I will have to wait for that. And then they're going to put up, the banner from them winning and everything. So I'm just like, yes. So I'm very excited and I just want to be able to watch it. That was the hardest thing about losing cable was being like, how am I going to watch the Cubs now? So I'm trying to get crafty or I'm just going to bite the bullet and pay for MLB TV for a year because I can't not watch the Cubs. Yes, I was very heated over the Cubs loss last night, unfortunately, but it's because I hate the Cardinals. There, I said it. They're awful.
Hello.
It's okay, Chris. I don't like them either.
Yay!
Yeah, me neither.
We can dislike the same things.
No, like, they knocked the Mets out of World Series contention, mm-hmm. like, 11 years ago, and I'm still a little bit bitter about it. Just a little bit.
Whoa.
Okay, Katie, if you want to Google that and, like, let me know what that means, like, run it through the translator. Really quick.
So. 11 years ago is a long time. Is this, like, a rest in peace and Erin situation, or?
No, I was just really, so like, 2006 was like the year that I really got into baseball, and the Mets were really good that year, and they were making a run at it, and then they lost to the Cardinals in the NLCS, and I was really sad, and it was just really cool, because it was something that my dad and I got to bond over, so, I don't know, I just love the Mets of that era.
I did think of you today, though, Chris. We had a baseball day at work where we could wear jeans because I work in an office, and we could also wear baseball gear. And they sent us an email saying, you know, wear your finest Brewer gear. And most of the office was wearing, like, shades of blue or shades of Brewers. But one guy showed up in a Cubs jersey, yes. And he got so much crap all day long. And I was like, you poor bastard. My friend Chris would love you. Aww. So somebody at my office was at least representing for you.
That's good. I know that our company has like a similar thing where you can support during football season, you can support the Packers, and during baseball season, you can support the Brewers. And I was like to my boss, I'm like, why can't we wear Cubs stuff? I'm like, we're right on the border here. I'm like, this is like, like a, this is a mixed bag here. I'm like, there's people that even like the White Sox. I don't know why, but there's people that do. So it's like, can't we show our team pride? He's like, we're in Wisconsin. I'm like, unfortunately. So I understand that, because if they let me wear Cubs stuff there, I'd be like, I'm there. I got hats. I got the things. I got everything. Let me just do it. I'm ready.
I think you should do it, Chris. I mean, like, I live in Seattle, and I have a coworker who is just inexplicably a Patriots fan, and he wears his Patriots gear to work, like, every day, and nobody gives him a hard time for it.
So the city I want to talk about is San Antonio. Grand Prix San Antonio was this past weekend. Team Unified Modern. It really seems like the team events have become so popular. Mm-hmm. I know they recently, Star City Games recently converted their open in Louisville next month to being a team constructed one, the one where one of you plays standard, one of you plays modern, and one of you plays legacy. And just seeing the energy from these events is so great. Seeing the selfies from people who, you know, you either are not surprised are working together, you know, like you see Huey and Reed and Owen, which we'll talk about a little later. You mean, or you see friends just sort of banding together, like Tim Willoughby and our friend Susie and our friend Ian. And it just seems to really bring out the best in people. Like, people seem to enjoy just playing. You know, I'm sure that they're there and maybe they want to do well, but it really brings out a different vibe in people, which is really great to watch. And it was also really nice to see some innovation there. You know, we've talked about how Modern is pretty wide open right now, and you can play anything you want to. And I noticed a couple of decks that I thought were really interesting. There is sort of the deck building limitation, and that you have to share a pool of cards, which makes you get a little creative with what you play. But the first deck I want to talk about that I really liked was Bant Nightfall.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple people that were playing this, and we've seen this in like the fringes of Modern. I don't really think it's a tier deck necessarily, but you know, it does well from time to time, and it is the Bant Nightfall deck, and you basically win with Retreat to Coral Helm and a really big Knight of the Reliquary.
Mm-hmm.
And the deck kind of wins out of nowhere. Like, it really, you know, every time I've played it, you're just sort of looking at it and you're like, okay. Oh, and then it kind of hits you what's happening, and you realize that you're just sort of dead. And it also, you know, it kind of looks like an Abzan Company deck, but then it has this kind of surprise element to it, which I think is really cool. There was also a blue-white control deck, which I feel like I saw a lot this past weekend, which is particularly noteworthy because Modern is sort of hostile towards control decks because there's so many kinds of decks you have to fight, and so it's really hard to tailor a control deck to build them all. But there was a blue-white control deck floating around, main deck Crucible of Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They are not playing around. One copy of Elsbeth Sense Champion, one Jace Architect of Thought, two Supreme Verdicts, one copy of Blessed Alliance, three Condemn.
Yes.
For those playing along at home, Condemn costs one white. It's an instant, and you can put an attacking creature on the bottom of their library, and then they gain life equal to the toughness. So that's one way to deal with the Death Shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great cube card, too.
Great cube card, great art. Four copies of Spreading Seas. In a control deck.
Get it.
Yeah. Two Detention Spheres, two copies of Porphyry Nodes in the sideboards. I love Porphyry Nodes. Card is hilarious. And I feel like I saw this deck quite a bit, and I know Shaheen Serrani played it as well. And then there's also been some talk of, there was also Death Shadow was everywhere, and it led to some people talking about that there might be a Bannon coming, because now we're kind of reaching that life cycle of decks that we see get banned, where you start off with kind of like the original version, and then the card is so powerful that you can kind of mess with it a little bit. And now we're seeing like Abzan Death Shadow and like four color Death Shadow. And you know, you're kind of reaching that point, like we saw with Splinter Twin, where people were doing like Living Twin, where it was like Living End. And you know, you see that sometimes where the card is just so broken, you can do whatever you want with it. And I feel like we're kind of inching into, you know, that space with Death Shadow. And so what did you all think? Like, you know, were you impressed with the decks that you saw? You know, do you think that we're on the road to a Death Shadow ban? Like, what do you think?
I was really impressed with the decks that were there. Even though there was a lot of Death Shadow, I feel like there were other decks aside from that that were impressive to see. Like you mentioned, Bant Nightfall. You know, I lost to that in a PPTQ. I was just like, what can I do here? Knight of the Reliquary is a force to be reckoned with sometimes. There were two copies, I believe, of Red Green Scapeshift that were floating around, which is nice. The blue-white control deck, though, is where my love was, like, all weekend. And I actually had to send a text to a friend of mine and apologize to him because I had played versus him the night before at FNM. I'm like, who runs Spreading Sea's main deck? I'm like, I've never heard of this in my life. And then I saw it, screen capped it, sent it to him, and I'm like, so Spreading Sea's doing work. I take back everything I said to you. So I'm just like, wow, really? And but I mean, I figure if you have these, you know, greedy mana bases, why the hell not? And it seems like a lot of people, even when they were interviewing the top four teams, you know, what do you think is the deck that's, you know, positioned well to deal with Death Shadow? And the majority of them were like blue-white control. So I'm like, okay, so this is a good thing. And I have all these cards, so, well, excuse me, except for Ancestral Vision, because I don't like it. And maybe I'm and maybe I'm in the minority here, but I don't want to wait to draw my cards. I want to draw them now. So so that's just me. But I was really happy to see blue-white come out strong, win the whole damn thing. And I was really proud of Adam Jansen and friends, and I was like, yes, this is so great. There was some affinity still hanging out there, so affinity hasn't gone away completely. I know that there was some talk about not a lot of affinity decks making like a big showing at different tournaments. Jund, apparently still good. Who would have thought?
Yep.
And Eldrazi Tron seems like it's maybe finding its footing now. And Gerard Fabiano with Madcap Moon, like, what?
Yeah.
Like, this is awesome. So I still have good feelings about Modern. I think that we had a good mix here. I personally don't like Dust Shadow. I wouldn't want to play it, and I don't like to necessarily play against it, but it's just not really my play style. Whether or not it would be banned, I don't know. Maybe. But I guess we'll have to wait and see, because there's definitely been times before where a lot of people were scared XYZ was going to get banned, and then it didn't happen. And then there were other things that it was like, well, you shouldn't be surprised that this happened, because of course it did. So it could definitely, I would say it's 50-50 right now. But otherwise, I really wish that they would do more Grand Prix that were Team Unified Modern, because when you have 10,000 people plus watching it, you know you're doing something right.
I actually played Death Shadow the other day for the first time. I was streaming Modern Dredge, and it was very disappointing. Like, maybe my opponent just had some bad beats, but, like, I was like, this is the great Death Shadow? I was like, this is the boogeyman of the format? I was like, I stopped this deck! I was like, what? And then I had read some articles where they were like, you know, Dredge is a lousy matchup for Death Shadow, and I was like, I'll say! I was like, I went into this being, like, terrified, and by the time it was over, I remember even saying on stream, like, this is the boogeyman of the format. And I couldn't even hold my laughter in because it was just so like slanted in my favor. Like there were significant turns where they did nothing, and I was like, this is all you have is three Inquisitions? Like what? So I personally am not really fazed by Death Shadow, but I can certainly understand how other people are.
You can't even say that with a straight face.
Because I just, like I said, I had never faced it before, even with Ad Nauseam. It's like, you know, we went to Indianapolis, never faced it. I hadn't faced it on Magic Online prior to this. This was literally my first time facing it in Modern. Even when we went to States, you know, I didn't face it at all. And so I had seen it around, obviously. And, you know, people have obviously had a lot of experience with it, and you hear how powerful it is. And so I went into it very humble, like, oh, Death Shadow, like, I'm going to get killed. Like, I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to sideboard. And like, as it was going on, I was just like, I'm not even trying. It was just so, so I just had a very different opinion of it when it was all said and done.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that it's necessarily the boogeyman of the format. I mean, I guess it is. It is very popular. It is very good. But, I mean, I guess there's been a little bit of outcry just because, like, of the top four decks at GP San Antonio, like, or, you know, of the top four teams, three of them had one player on Death Shadow. So it was very prevalent, and it was clearly, you know, a good deck to bring to that tournament. But, I don't know. I mean, these sorts of tournaments are such outliers just because of the deck building restrictions. Like, not only is Death Shadow a really great deck, but it's a deck that doesn't really share cards with anything else other than, you know, Jund. So if you don't have a Jund player or an Abzan player on your team, you could very easily be like, oh, Death Shadow is, you know, the best black-green mid-range deck. Sure, we'll play that, and you can play Affinity, and you can play Eldrazi or something, and everything works out really well. I mean, I think the main reason why we saw Affinity being so popular was because it also doesn't share cards with a lot of other decks in the format. I mean, I'm just sort of mentally going through all the cards in Affinity and I'm thinking like, what else do these other decks play? I think part of it is obviously the deck is good and part of it is that this is just a very unique tournament. And I think, you know, it may be a little premature to call for a ban.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if we saw a ban of Death Shadow. I do love Team Unified Modern because, like, everybody just wants to play Magic with their friends. And what better way to play Magic than actually with your friends? Mm-hmm. And I really like that we saw the return of Affinity this weekend. I think it was chosen, like Hallie said, because of its lack of shared cards. But it also goes to show that it's still a good deck. Like, it's still in the top four. And somebody has to be winning the games for the team. And, you know, you can't imagine that Affinity's just losing all of them. So I think mm-hmm. just because we've seen a decline in Affinity in the last few weeks doesn't mean that it's down and out by any means. You know, I don't know if people are going to be pecking more artifact hate based on this GP just because it is an outlier, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it crop up in the next few Modern tournaments either. I just really love all these deck lists and what people come up with. This is just such a fun format, and I do hope that they do more in the future because I think it's a great time to see, like, the camaraderie between players and their teammates and people watching each other's games, and I think it's just a really fun time for Magic.
I think Affinity is certainly best when people aren't expecting it. You know, and Katie, you brought up that Affinity has sort of declined a little bit in terms of metagame shares and numbers, and that's when Affinity is best, when mm-hmm. people get comfortable and they, you know, there are only so many sideboard slots to go around. And so, you know, there are people going, well, you know, we're not seeing a lot of Affinity. I'll just take out an Ancient Grudge or I'll just take out a whenever. And Affinity players, you know, the seasoned Affinity players, you know, have a knack for keeping their finger sort of on the pulse of the format and going, now's a good time. Now's the time. And they know that when people have their guard down, that's the time to sort of strike. And I think this was just sort of a perfect storm of, you know, Hallie mentioned, you know, the unique meta and that Affinity doesn't share a lot of cards, but also just a good time of, you know, people were getting comfortable and people were kind of scrambling to, okay, I only have 15 sideboard slots. What do they need to go to? And maybe they were cutting on Affinity hate and that's sort of what punished them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I really like this format. I like the way that it also doesn't require you to, you're playing together, but it's not like Two-Headed Giant. You know, one of the things I really struggle with Two-Headed Giant is the chemistry. You know, I love some of my friends dearly, but we sometimes just don't play well together. You know, and Katie and Hallie, you had amazing chemistry. Like, I love watching you two play and you hit it off so well. And, you know, that's really hard for me to do. Like, I can't just do Two-Headed Giant with anybody, but with the team event like this, you know, you're not really working with them. Like, you know, they can help you in things like that, but I feel like that's less based on chemistry. And so I feel like I could play, like, let's say if you and Hallie, you know, wanted to form a team, or even Chris and Hallie wanted to form a team, you know, even if we didn't necessarily work well together, like in a Two-Headed Giant way, I feel like in this format we would. And mm-hmm. so I really feel like that opens up more doors for me in terms of finding people to play with. Cause I feel like I'm always turning people down for Two-Headed Giant. Cause I'm like, you're really nice, but we just don't click. I don't really think I'd have that problem in this setting. I think it would be a lot more fun.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. So Hallie, you also got a peek at Modern because you got the chance to do some coverage this past weekend. How did that go?
It went pretty well. I haven't done coverage for Card Kingdom in a while, but my schedule changed recently now that I'm at my new job, and there was a Modern 1K this weekend, and it was also a Grand Prix trial for Las Vegas, so a lot of people came out for it. There were 72 players, which was the cap, which was really nice, especially since a bunch of people in my area, believe it or not, actually headed to San Antonio for the GP. Modern players will travel great lengths to play their favorite format, especially with their friends. So there were a whole bunch of people from the Seattle area who were down there. But those who couldn't go to San Antonio or didn't want to make the trek came to Card Kingdom and played some Modern, so that was really sweet. Usually what we do with commentary when there's a day-long event is there are two main commentators and an alternate. So the alternate just sort of comes in, relieves the main commentators so that they can take a break, eat some food, decompress a little bit, and then come back into the booth to do the top eight. So usually like the last couple rounds of the Swiss is when the alternate will come in. So I came in round five when the tournament was already in progress. And I'd watched a little bit of it on stream already just to sort of get an idea of like what we had and hadn't seen on camera. Because the commentators are usually responsible for picking feature matches. And we had some really interesting things on camera that day. As I was preparing to go into the booth, I saw that Taking Turns was on camera, which was really awesome. Like, I always love seeing Taking Turns, but I'm also really glad that I didn't have to commentate that match because I don't know half the cards in that deck. I've never played against it in Modern at all. So, like, I would have to be looking up cards, like, every 2 minutes. So, that was a little bit of a relief. But, when I sat down, I had, Our main feature match was, I think it was Green-White Hate Bears against Lantern Control. And I was like, okay, these players are doing super well. These are two decks that we haven't seen yet. Let's do it. It was really interesting. My co-host, funny story. So my co-host for the fifth round is a guy named Nathan Santo.
I saw that.
No relation. But I used to refer to him as my Magic brother because like every time when I was first learning to play Magic, that was when he was playing really competitively and going to like PTQs all the time. So we would sit across from each other at like every player meeting. And after a little while, it became like this running joke that like, you know, we were related. And then I ended up like asking him like, hey, like, are your ancestors from Hungary? And he was like, no, they're from Italy. And I was like, damn it, we're not related. That would be really sweet if we were like third cousins or something. But anyway, Nathan Santo was great. It was really cool being in the booth with him since I haven't seen him in a while, and he's a really cool dude. We were commentating that match together. He clearly wanted the Green-White Hate Bears player to win. He does not like Lantern Control at all. So that was funny. It was a really fun match to commentate. And then, Jake McCune, the other commentator, came in for the next match and we did some commentary together and he was really great. Like, the two of them were just super knowledgeable about the format and we clicked pretty well actually in the booth. So it was a really good experience.
Awesome. Yeah, I was there. I was there before you got on. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw Nathan's name there, I didn't know who he was. And so I got a little mama bear and I was like, her name is Hallie. That needs to be fixed. Why isn't that fixed? Hallie Santo. Who is this Nathan guy? Her name isn't Nathan, you know? And I was like, and then there was a point where he was like, I'm Nathan Santo. And I'm like, oh, that's
awkward.
Hallie's not on yet. Okay, I'm just gonna wait for Hallie to get here because I'm really just here for Hallie. And so yeah, so that was fun waiting for you. And then you came on and I was very happy to see you. And then I saw that Taking Turns was happening and I was like, Hallie, tell me you didn't pick this. And so then that was going on and then they were like Lantern Control and chat was like, oh. And so I stuck around for that match and then I had to go and do my stream for April Fool's Day. But it was really lovely to see you on there. I love seeing you sort of, you know, flex your coverage muscles, and I think you're really good at it, and I hope you get to do more.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I am hoping to do more of it now that my schedule is different.
Yes, absolutely. So I did a stream this past weekend. I did a stream on April Fool's Day, actually. And I know that it feels like April Fool's Day has gotten a really bad rap and that a lot of people just take it too far. Or some people just plain aren't funny. And so I kind of came up with an idea that I thought was pretty harmless. Like it wasn't going to offend anybody too much or hopefully wouldn't hurt anybody. Except maybe my opponents. I got the idea to do a burn stream. For those who don't know, I've been very vocal about my dislike for burn decks. And I thought, wouldn't it be fabulous if I played burn? I've never done it before. And I even went so far as to, I have the John Avon Basics hanging up on my wall, but I've never hung up the mountain. And I even went so far as to take out the mountain, hang it up, covering the swamp, because Lord knows there's no black and burn decks. I even gave my webcam like a reddish tint. I wore a red tank top.
Wow.
I put on a good face. I was committed. I found a list on Channel Fireball with a sideboard guide. And I played Modern Burn. in a league for 5 rounds.
How was it?
I ended up finishing 2-3. There were a couple games that were a little difficult. I did end up facing Abzan Company, which is naturally a bad scene for me. And then there was one game where I got flooded, and then there was the Burn Mirror, which was very interesting, although they were on Mardu Burn. Speaking of Burn decks who play black. But I had a lot of fun. I have to really, really say it was a lot of fun. It was interesting to see how the other half lives. Like, I was actually really... So I had a couple of people in chat who were kind of helping me play the deck because I had no idea what to do. And my friend Alexis, her husband was in chat, and he's obviously married to a Burn player. And so he was giving me sort of feedback. And I got really upset when I had to be conservative. So like a Tide Hollow Sculler had like taken one of my spells, and I had a Searing Blaze, and I was like, I want to kill it. And he's like, you can't kill it. And I was like, but I want to kill it. And he's like, you got to wait. And I was like, what am I waiting? What is this waiting? I was like, I came to fling burn spells. And he was like, well, no. He's like, you got to save your burn spells. He's like, you really don't want to hit creatures unless you absolutely have to. And there were a couple times where he was like, you need a Skullcrack. You got to wait for it. You got to get a Tarkus command. You got to do this. And I was like, I didn't come here for this. Like, I really, you know, I was really hoping for just this kind of reckless good time. And, you know, there were some times where I had to play it cautiously or not attack or not use a burn spell. And so I went into it with this notion of just sort of being reckless and getting hellbent as quickly as possible. And I didn't think it would be as intuitive as it was, quite frankly. I had a lot of fun with Turn 1 Goblin Guy. That was a lot of fun. It was basically just sort of like setting the chess clock and being like, all right, game on. And that was fun. I really enjoyed stacking my prowess triggers when it came to Monastery Swift Spear, like sequencing my burn spells correctly, which again, didn't know was a thing. I thought you just fling them at someone. You know, fetching was very important, you know, prioritizing your landfall with Searing Blaze. You know, there was a lot that went into it, and I didn't expect that, and I had a lot of fun with it. I don't know if I'll do it again, but it definitely gave me some insight as to kind of how the other half lives, and, you know, there were more decisions than I anticipated. And there were things about the deck that I did enjoy. And it just, it was a lot of fun, and it got a really good reception that I could see. And, it was just a really good time.
Do you still dislike Burn as much as you did prior to streaming with Burn?
Tell us your feelings.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll do that. I can't. So here's the thing. So the way that I've been rationalizing it is I can enjoy playing it and also not enjoy losing to it, if that makes any sense. Like, I'm probably not as passionately against it as I was. Like, I may hang up the mountain. Like, well, let's put it that way. The mountain might come out of my closet.
Oh,
my
God. We'll go that far.
The mountain's coming out of the closet.
I know, right? But I'm not going to, you know, I have a different appreciation for burn players than I did before. I probably won't be as mean to burn players as I have been. but, you know, do I still enjoy losing to it? No, it's still miserable to lose to. And, you know, there were even a couple hands where you do get free wins. You know, there was one game where I had a Nacatl and a Swift Spear, and then I had 3 bolts in hand. And it was literally like, bolt, and I was just and I was having a blast, but I know damn well that the other person on their side of it was like, this is bullshit. And so, you know, there are, you know, while there are those hands and while there are those games that do require a lot of decisions, there are just sometimes those games where you just literally just roll your face. You're like, bloop, you dead yet? Bloop. Like, it's and there was no thought to it. And so, you know, I can understand why people have that feeling, and I have that feeling. You know, I had a lot of fun playing the deck, but it still sucks to lose to. And so that's kind of how I'm rationalizing it, is that I did enjoy it. I will probably lighten up on the deck a little bit more, but still sucks to lose to. Mm-hmm. And I understand that after playing the deck, too, because there were some hands where I was like, are they just dead? And chat was like, yeah. And I was like, this is really it? This is all I do? And so, you know, so I can understand where that comes from. So it was definitely an eye-opening experience. Like, I would recommend, you know, if anybody's listening and if you have a deck that you just maybe have a thing against, I would recommend giving it a try, and maybe you might, you know, change your opinion too.
I would love to see a picture of the mountain hung up.
It's already been taken down and put back in the closet, but
it might come
the video
out.
Has been The video, it very well might. Their video has been archived on Twitch. There are many clips of me throwing bolts at people. Lee Sharp, in fact, made a clip because he was like, this is awesome and this will never happen again. So there is evidence that this happened if you do want to watch it and have a laugh with me. I do want to mention though, Chris, you made a comment earlier about somebody playing a main deck Spreading Seas and you were like, who does this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was me the other day when I was playing Vintage and someone ran main deck Containment Priest. That was a bad scene. Because I had an unmask in hand, and I was like, this is game one on turn two. What could they possibly have? I don't need to unmask them, dredge my brains out, and all of a sudden Narcomoebas come out, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be sweet. And he taps a couple of planes, and he goes, Containment Priest? And I'm like,
what?
This is game one. What are you doing? And he's like, I don't like losing to dredge. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I know what you mean when you say somebody surprises you with some main deck shenanigans where you're like, what on earth?
Oh, yeah.
That was clipped too. I was not a happy camper. So speaking of happiness, some Amonkhet announcements came out today. We got a very stunning trailer, which I've watched a couple of times. I think it's really awesome. And they officially confirmed what the mechanics of the set are going to be. It's going to be Exert. We have Exert. We have -1/-1 counters are going to be prevalent in this set. And on that note, they've announced that +1/+1 counters are not going to be in the set. Because obviously they cancel each other out. Cycling has been confirmed. Aftermath has been confirmed, which we last saw on a leaked card. And they confirmed that it is real, which I'm really excited about, obviously, because you can play it from the graveyard. And they talked about Exert. They talked about Embalm. This whole post was really exciting. The trailer's really exciting. We got a couple of new cards to look at. They revealed the Red God. She's pretty dope. There's a couple new cards called Trials and Cartouches. I know Rachel Agnes was on Twitter today, and we were coming up with all sorts of touche puns. So she had mentioned that she hopes they touche her in the right way. And then I immediately thought of that Ellie Goulding song, and all I kept hearing was, touch me like you do, touch. Yeah, terrible. So I think the cartouches are awesome. I think the trials are awesome. I am really hyped for this set. Like, what do you guys think of today's announcements?
I'm more excited than I was the previous week to play with new cards for Amonkhet. I think that we're going to see a resurgence of a very aggressive red deck that's just going to, like, crap its hand as fast as it can. So that kind of makes me happy because it's been a little while since that's been a thing. I don't really count Mardu vehicles as, like, a red deck. It's just meh.
You can't even say it.
Yeah, it's just... I can't. Because that Flameblade Adept, like, looks really sick. And, like, I'm not really a red deck player, but I'm like, this might be fun. So then the trials look cool. I agree. The cartouches look cool as well. So I'm pretty excited to see what decks people are going to be building once the full spoiler's out. I really do still like the Embalm mechanic quite a bit, and I'm not really a person that messes with the graveyard, so to speak. So, and I'm also interested in this -1/-1 counter business, but they had... I believe Morrow had mentioned something about that Wither was not coming back, but now it's not. So I'm interested to kind of see what's going on with that and some more explanations about things as they spoil more cards. And I'm just happy that it's here and I can't wait to play with it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the red cards as well, especially since a couple of the ones we've seen so far seem like they play really nicely with Madness from Shadows Over Innistrad. Like, there are these red cards. Like, so Hazoret has an activated ability that lets you discard a card and deal 2 damage to your opponent. And I'm just like, huh, I guess you could play Fiery Temper in a deck with her. Like, that seems pretty sweet. And then there's the 1/2 with Menace for one that has... like it's +1/+0 until end of turn when you cycle or discard a card. So that's cool. It just seems like that interaction could come into play in Standard, which seems really neat. I'm also really enjoying the art for this set. Just seeing all of the really cool use of, I just really have been enjoying the use of the color gold in Magic art recently. Like, I loved how shiny and beautiful Kaladesh was, and it seems like Amonkhet is going to have not like a similar aesthetic, but like a similar color palette in some regards. And I just really enjoy that. The one thing that I am a little wary about is so we got these split cards now, or I'm not sure what we're calling them, like aftermath cards. Like, I'm not sure what the name for them is going to be. There's been some discussion on social media about like how people orient their graveyards and how that impacts like what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a bunch of people say like, oh, I put my graveyard to the right, and so I can just look to the right and I'll be able to read the card and it's no big deal. But I put my graveyard on the left, and so I'm kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to do now. I'll have to move my graveyard or something. So yeah, that'll be an adjustment, just having to read the tiny text on my cards in my graveyard, but I'm sure I'll figure it out.
Yeah, the way I have my graveyard on the right, and I like stack it so you can read each card name down in a line, and then I put my exile pile under the very top card of my graveyard sideways. So it'll be interesting, because it said that you're supposed to, or you can orient it sideways in your graveyard so you don't forget that you have an aftermath card, unlike cards with flashback that just sit there and look like every other card. So that, yeah, it'll just be an adjustment, you know, not confusing like exile with what's actually in the graveyard and et cetera, et cetera. But, I'm super loving the theme. I didn't think when they were like, it's going to be like an Egypt world and, I don't know, I wasn't sold, but as we get further into it, I'm really digging the art and all the flavor and just the overall theme of everything. Like, I think everything is meshing really well, which I feel like we've been to some planes where I just was kind of like, eh, yeah, like, you're supposed to be doing this, but, you know, they're just cards. But I'm a lot more sold on it now, and I really like the cat snake. As an animal lover, you gotta love the cat snake. I'm not as sold on Hazoret as everybody else seems to be so far. I feel like there's always these really cool cards that get released in, like, oh my god, I'm spacing the word. Previews, I guess, a preview card. And people get really hype about them, like, you know, the gods back in Theros. And then, like, sometimes they just aren't good, and then you're kind of sad. And so I'm just reserved about Hazoret. I think she has potential, but I don't want to be disappointed by her later. So I'm just going to ride it out slow and hope that, you know, she comes through and is badass, like she looks like she might be. But I'm excited to see what all the other gods hold, because I think that they're all going to be pretty cool.
What do you think of the new take on the gods? You know, Mara wrote an article today and was talking about sort of what they learned or what they took away from the Theros experience, you know, and how they kind of streamlined them a little bit. You know, they are, so these are creatures regardless. They simply made it so that they can't attack or block based on a clause, you know, and Hazoret's is, you know, having a certain amount of cards in hand. And, you know, with Devotion, they weren't even creatures. They were just enchantments until you were able to really activate them. And, you know, do you think that that was a good change? You know, it does kind of make them a little more weak to, you know, you can Doomblade them now, you know, because they're always creatures and, you know, they all seem to have this activated ability. You know, what do you think about that? Was that a good change?
I think it was. I think there was a lot of confusion on new players' parts and not new players' parts about the gods from Theros. And I think this is a good way to just kind of clean it up. And while they are still vulnerable to, like, enchantments and stuff, not letting them do anything, I still think that they are going to be powerful in their own right, and still be played heavily. But I think they went a little too far in Theros with what they're trying to accomplish, and it just created a lot of confusion. Even at, like, very late stages in Standard, there was still, you know, rulings on it and people being confused, even at high-level tournaments. So I think it's just good to keep it a little simpler.
Yeah. On the subject of simplifying rules, there was some discussion on Reddit today, and it appears that with Amonkhet, there are going to be some rules clarifications taking place, specifically when it comes to aftermath and split cards and fuse cards and things of that nature. And so there was some discussion on Reddit. A young man named Eli started this, and then Matt Tabak officially chimed in. And the bottom line is that split cards are not going to work the way that they have been for the last couple of months. We've seen sort of these brain in a jar beck and call decks. We've seen these Kari Zev's expertise into breaking and entering. You know, all the expertise is let you cast a card for free, and people have been sort of abusing that, quite frankly. And we've seen Sram's expertise, you know, being used into Alive and Well and just all sorts of randomness happening. And if I'm understanding this correctly, that's not going to be allowed for much longer. It says that previously we played a delicate dance when asking about converted mana costs. Sometimes Destined in Lead, which is one of the new cards from Amonkhet, CMC is most like 2. Goblin Dark Dwellers can target it. Sometimes it's like 4. Transgress the Mind can grab it. Sometimes it's like 6. Dark Confidant dings you for 6 if you reveal it. This rewards players who dig into the rules and figure that out, but it also confuses a lot of people too, so now it's simple. If the card isn't on the stack, it has a converted mana cost of 6, which is Destined in Lead. Destined on the stack has a converted mana cost of 2, and Lead on the stack has a converted mana cost of 4. But Destined in Lead, anytime it's not one or the other, just has a converted mana cost of 6. And so going forward, you can't Goblin Dark Dweller somebody into Boom Bust anymore, which is something I've had happen and is fucking not fun. You know, and you can't, it's really not. And so, yeah, and there were some people that thought this was really great, and then there were some people that were saying this is just really unnecessary. You're taking some really fun tools away in Modern. You know, and Katie, what do you think about this? Like, you know, you being our resident judge, you know, have you seen confusion with this? Do you think that this is a good thing? Where do you stand?
I love this. Like, this link started going around today, and I was like, yes, finally it makes sense. I think it's the exact same thing where, like, some players just get got, and that feels bad, especially when I feel like when somebody's confused on how split card works, and you come over as a judge and you explain it, and they still don't understand kind of afterwards when you've made your ruling, I feel like that's what really makes me have like a bad taste in my mouth, is because like you explained it and yes, they understand what you're saying, but they're just like, that just doesn't make sense. Like, that's just not really fair. And Magic should be fair in some senses. And I think in terms of rules, it should be fair. And I think this new way that they're going to have split cards be ruled as, makes it way more fair. And I do know that there are a lot of people who will be sad to see some of their favorite things go, but you can still play that way at kitchen table. Like, you can still make up your own rules, not in tournaments and stuff, but for tournament things, I think it's better to have kind of everybody on the same page, simplified. Just, it is how it should have always been, I think.
Oh, I was gonna say, I don't disagree. And people that are like surprised that this happened, it was one of those things that it was gonna happen. Like, I'm sorry that you don't get to abuse the rules to suit your own needs. And I know there's people that are all like butt devastated about the whole thing. Like, it's been all over Reddit. How could Wizards do this to us? This is the worst thing ever. No fun allowed and all this whatever. And I'm like, cry more, because people are just like, I invested into this Naya expertise deck. And, you know, I had to go and dig for the list on Goldfish. So it's like, probably not that big of a deal. And I go and I look at it, and the majority of cards that were in it that were good, you could use those to build other decks. So you're not really out of anything. It's like, so you can't play, you know, this silliness. Just go ahead and use those. Emrakul is for something else. You have Noble Hierarchs. They're only worth like $1 billion. So you can use that to build, you know, Bant Eldrazi. You could still play Infect. You can play Abzan Coco, you know, shit your brains out. Like, I don't care. It's just that, like, this was something that needed to happen. And don't blame it on people not understanding for why it happened. It's because this just should not have happened in the first place. And I'm sorry that, you know, we've ruined your fun time, but it's over and it's done with, and you will find another deck. If people can get over Splinter Twin, and if people can get over Pod by finding other ways to do something that they like to do, or find a new deck altogether, then you will be just fine.
It's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised that it went on for this long. You know, this was never how it was supposed to go. It's like, you know, Wizards has acknowledged that they don't necessarily test older formats. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of cards to remember. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, they didn't even think of copycat, you know. And so it's understandable that something like this would sort of slip under the radar. And, you know, I commend them for coming out and saying this was never how it was supposed to be, that, you know, these cards were never meant to be free. You know, like, you know, you can cast a free Tarmogoyf for a free Dark Confidant with an expertise, and that's fine. But, you know, I appreciate them coming forward and saying that we're acknowledging that it was never supposed to go down like this, and we're sort of closing that loophole. And I think that's a really, you know, honest thing to do. You know, it'd be very easy for them to sort of look the other way. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So our friend Gemma Hammonds wrote another article for Hipsters of the Coast. I love her work. Like, I was reading this to get ready for the show, and she really writes quite well, and so I hope that she continues to do so. But she wrote an article this week called Criticism is a Gift, which is a very interesting phrase and not one you hear often, but Gemma does a really good job explaining it. And she starts off by saying, Magic players like to complain. I hear this sentiment echoed often in the Magic community. It troubles me because it implies that Magic players should not express their views and opinions on the game. It says, be quiet and accept what you are given. And Gemma kind of says something very radical. She says, criticism is a gift. Being told what you did well, what you did poorly, and how you can improve helps you to grow. And she goes on to talk about how, you know, when you are a creator, you know, you have to create. It's just something sort of in you. And how sometimes we develop tolerances for that, and, you know, how we should kind of, you know, learn to let people in. But also on the flip side, people can really stand to sort of give better criticism. And kind of talking about how criticism in and of itself is not a bad thing, and how it applies to some of the cultural criticism that Kaladesh received and things like that. And I loved so many things about this, and I really related to this as a longtime content creator. And I was wondering, like, what you all think about this. Like, how do you view criticism? You know, do you agree with Gemma? And what do you think?
I definitely agree with her central message. Like, I think we learn more from criticism than we learn from praise. Because if you praise someone on what they're doing, they'll just keep doing the same thing and won't change, which in a lot of cases is fine. If you're doing a great thing, keep doing it. But the best way that you grow and continue to, you know, develop your skills is by receiving criticism and by taking it well. So I definitely agree with that. And that's definitely something that's helped with my personal development, whether it was, you know, writing or, you know, when I started rock climbing, like, I ended up taking a class with a trainer who basically pointed out all the things I was doing wrong. And I was like, cool, I'm going to do these things differently now and I'll get better. And I did. So that's cool. I do think it's important to emphasize that she's not just talking about any criticism. She's talking about being constructive and about giving a combination of praise and criticism. And I definitely agree with that too, because I think that there's no point in criticizing something if you can't do it constructively. If you aren't criticizing with the intent of helping that the person you're criticizing learn and grow from what you're trying to say. Like, I don't know. It's the main reason why I have issues with Magic players who just say, oh, this card is bad, don't play it. Or like, oh, this deck is bad. It's like, every time a Magic player says that, I'm always like, why? And I press them and I ask them questions and I make them explain themselves, because that's not constructive criticism. Telling someone like, oh, your deck is bad and you should feel bad. Like, no, like, give a reason, suggest an alternative, be constructive. And yeah, I just wish that more people gave constructive criticism, because I think it is very valuable.
I feel like people who don't receive criticism well, or who get overly defensive, became that way because they were given bad criticism to begin with at some point in their life.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. And that, like, that sucks. Like, I feel like that just sets, like, say you're in fifth grade or something and you, like, try and draw a horse. This is the story of my life. I always tried to draw horses for some reason. I could never draw a horse. I don't know why I kept trying. Anyway, and I remember, like, somebody at school being like, God, that horse sucks. And I was like, yeah, I know, but I'm working on it. But, you know, that just, like, something like that can set you up for being more defensive to receiving criticism later in your life. And so I think learning to give criticism is just as important as learning to receive criticism. And she, Gemma points out that you should make a criticism sandwich where like your pieces of bread are the positives and then your lunch meat or veggies or whatever is the kind of what you'd like to see improved in whatever you're critiquing. And I have to admit, I'm pretty bad at putting on the top piece of bread. Like, when I give criticism, I often find myself saying, like, here's what I think could be done better, but I really liked this. And so it's, like, two-thirds of the sandwich, but we could do better. So that's something I'm trying to work on personally. But we saw a lot of criticism this last week when the Borders, new Borders came out for the new masterpieces. And I saw a lot of people just being like, this card sucks. I don't like this card. You guys really fucked up this card when you guys made this. I'm sure they had that tone too. But, you know, I think it's important to let, I mean, we let Wizards know how we're feeling as a collective audience for their game. And I think it's important to let them know that in a respectful way, because while we play their game and we enjoy it, they're also making the game for us. And it's just, I feel like it's a respectful two-way street that can be had by all. You know, they're always respectful towards their players. And some people would say that they have to be because, you know, they want our money in the end. But I don't know. I think it's just being a decent person, like having a nice two-way street, open conversation. But she says, you know, say like, I really like the art in this card. I wish I could see more of the art by making the border smaller, but I really like how it does look different or something like that. You've given your criticism. It was respectful. You didn't have to say that they were shitty people and, you know, everything else that's been said in the last week. But overall, I really like this article. I highly recommend everybody read it because giving criticism is definitely something that everybody should learn in their life.
I can definitely agree with that. Some people are not very good at giving constructive criticism. I know that I'm not bad at it, but I'm not the best at it. But I hate when I'm receiving criticism that isn't constructive, especially when it comes down to someone asking, why did you make that play? Because I wish that they would phrase it differently sometimes, because then you automatically feel like, what do you mean? Did I screw this up? Is that what you're telling me? That I did this badly? So I can definitely see where that would be useful in that situation. Yeah, a lot of people just need to learn how to give criticism constructively, and people could learn a lot from what she wrote. I didn't really know what I was going to be getting into when I read it, so I was kind of happy that she was able to flesh things out to make people understand from a variety of different perspectives, and also that she gave you like a guideline, be like, if you don't know how to do this, here's how. And so I appreciate that she took time to do that, and also say that, you know, constructive criticism is a good thing, and it's not something that should automatically be taken as it's bad. So kudos to Gemma for writing this article, because I thought it was really dope.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this. You know, like I said, I've been podcasting for going on 4 years now. I think one of my Facebook on this days was me like signing on the legit MTG, which you know, feels like an eternity ago. But, you know, I've been at this a long time. I've been blogging for much longer. And, you know, I have certainly become a lot more, I don't want to say defensive necessarily, but just more careful with who I choose to get criticism from, because, you know, a lot of things that people tell you, it doesn't sound like they really are telling you because they want you to get better. It's telling you because they either, you know, just have a bone to pick with you, or they simply didn't like something. And, you know, I'm really okay with people disagreeing with me. I'm fine with it. I get it. I have a lot of unpopular opinions. I play shitty decks. I get it. You know, but a lot of the criticism that, you know, I've seen, particularly when it comes to the YouTube side of things, is, you know, it's talking about your weight, your voice, your sexuality. What am I supposed to do with that? Like, am I supposed to change my voice? Like, am I supposed to like lose weight? Like, what do you want me to do with that? You know, if I had mentioned a deck and I felt a card goes in your deck, and let's say you play that deck and I'm completely wrong, that's fine. I'm really open to you saying, hey girl, we actually don't use that card, you know, that was a bad suggestion. Okay, fine. You know, or let's say I don't know how the judge program works. And let's say I make a comment about judges and there's a judge that's like, we actually don't do that. Okay, that's totally fine. That's feedback I can work with. And that's knowledge that I can sort of store in my memory bank for another time. But so much of the feedback you get just has no, you know, or if I've recorded a video, what am I going to go back and re-record it? Like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, and I feel like people don't think about that. And that's something I've become aware of being on the receiving end. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned how to give better criticism being on the receiving end. You know, and so I have sort of put up the walls a little bit where, you know, I sort of only listen to a select group of people, but I also happen to work with people that I know can give me criticism too. Like, you know, Hallie and I have had conversations where I shouldn't have said something, or, you know, Evan and Ruben and I will have conversations where a joke simply didn't land. And so I think if you surround yourself with good people, it's not that you necessarily aren't turning out to like the public necessarily, but like you know, you're already getting criticism, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. You know, you're not really having to go far for it from it. You're not having to go far for it because you're already getting it from people that you know and trust and that you know are going to keep it constructive and keep it cute. And it's just too much of a hassle for me to sort of prospect, as Stibbs taught me. Stibbs taught me the word prospecting feedback. You know, prospecting feedback is so exhausting. And so I would rather just keep people around me that I know will keep it real with me, to where I won't have to delve into like the YouTube comments, or I won't have to delve into my mentions, you know, for things like that. But, you know, again, if it is constructive, I am willing to listen. And I think that's something that's true for a lot of people, but you just really have to keep it cute.
For sure.
So before we go, we have a listener question. Send us your questions at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Two more episodes to go. Be sure and get your questions in while you still can. We are happy to help you. And this question comes to us from Matthew. And Matthew says, hello, been listening to the show since it started and was a longtime fan of the Deck Tees. Sorry to see the podcast end. You ladies always jump to the front of the queue when a new episode was released, and I had to send an email before it was over. My daughter just turned 2 years old, and I'm hoping and looking forward to the day that she's interested in learning the game that her daddy has been playing for over 20 years. I started playing in 1994 with a few breaks since then. You ladies have been a great inspiration and give me perspectives I never would have had. My question to you is, which Planeswalker relationships would you like to see explored in the story a little more? Jason, Liliana, Nyssa and Chandra, Sarkhan and Narset. Any others that you hope to see? Who do you ship and why? Please keep up the great work you all do, both inside and outside of Magic. Matthew.
Y'all, I am so not Vorthos girl. I don't even know how to answer this question.
Hallie's like, who are these people?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard about the Nyssa and Chandra thing, and I'm more or less here for that. Like, it's really cool to see, you know, same-sex relationships explored in Magic, and I would love to see more of that. But I don't regularly read the story, and so I'm not really up on the lore and, like, who's in a relationship with whom and whatever. I mean, I always really enjoy, like, hearing about, you know, not necessarily, you know, the nitty-gritty, like, gossip and relationships and whatnot and, you know, fanfic fodder. But I do actually really enjoy hearing about, like, the friendships between Planeswalkers. Like, the whole, like, Venser and Karn thing. Like, that was really cute and really heartwarming. So I would like to hear more about, like, either Planeswalkers' relation, like, friendships or, like, rivalries, or, you know, what the relationships are between certain Planeswalkers that we don't hear about very much. Like, we hear about, like, Jason Chandra and, like, Liliana and Chandra and, like, Nyssa and Chandra all the time. But it's, like, what's Gideon and Chandra's friendship like? I mean, I feel like that's not something we hear about all that much. So, I don't know. I think I'd like to hear about either, like, the more contentious relationships or just, like, the really cool, like, buddy relationships.
I will co-sign with what Hallie said pretty much, because I can agree with what she said very, very much. I like the idea of, like, super cool buddy friend relationships, because that's what I like to read. That's what I'm interested in. And, like, kind of like a segue into that is my favorite companion with Doctor Who was Donna Noble, because it was someone that it was not.
Me too.
Yes, because it wasn't a romantic relationship. It was like, yeah, hey, we're ultimate broskies forever and we're going through time and space and doing all these crazy, wacky things. And that's what I really enjoyed. And so when I look at the magic story, it's less about, ooh, I wonder who's kissing who, who's stooping who. No, I want to like know, like, what do they have to learn from each other as friends? What have their hardships mm-hmm. been? Do they bring out the best or worst in each other? So I'm very interested in that. If I had to pick like a traditional ship, then I guess Nyssa and Chandra is probably the one I'd be more interested in, just because I like the idea of a non-heterosexual relationship. So I'm all about that. But more for super happy fun times and less smoochy times on this end. Now, if we were talking Harry Potter, I might go off on a tangent, but this is not, and this is magic, and I'm like less involved in that lore. But I'm totally there for people that are. I just can't really go fully down the rabbit hole.
So I'm all here for Nyssa and Chandra, but I would like it to be artfully done. I think that we are at a place in our progressiveness and magic that I wouldn't want it to just be like an exploration into a lesbian sex life, because I think there's so much more to a relationship than that, obviously, no matter, you know, your orientation or what kind of relationship you're in. But I would want it to be very tastefully done and an exploration into kind of, you know, what they experience in the planes as a lesbian couple and, you know, their interconnectedness and kind of how they're the dynamic of their relationship is. I would also like to see more of the relationship. I always forget their names, but they had the big, in the card, they're kind of like looking over their like city and they're like, look at what we built together.
Oh, Kaneos and Tiros.
Yeah. I would really like to hear from that relationship too.
Just
TNT forever.
I don't know. I think they're pretty cute and I would like to see kind of what's going on over there too. But those are probably my two at the moment that I'd be interested in actually reading about.
Yeah, I am completely here for Chandra and Nyssa, you know, Nyssandra. I think that really needs to happen. I love Liliana and Chandra, the idea of sort of like the buddy cop thing. Mm-hmm. It was very Harley and Ivy for me. And I'm under the impression that Liliana was maybe manipulating her, which duh. But, you know, if there was like a, if there was maybe a genuineness to it or like it was real, I would love to see more of their adventures too, as I think that they play really well off each other. And that's a dynamic that we really don't get to see very much. And, I really enjoyed seeing DePaula working along with them. Carrie Zev, I would love to see more of in the future. I thought she was a really great character. I'd really love to see some closure to the Liliana Raven Man storyline, not necessarily a ship, but I feel like that's something that's been sort of teased for a while and we really haven't had some closure on. And also too, I've been championing this one for a long time. Ravnica Block, I want Feather to come back and whoop Aurelia's ass. And there's a small devout group of people that have been pushing for Feather to come back, because I really feel like the storyline left it wide open for Feather to come back and be like, that's not what I meant, because Aurelia sort of took the Boroses and kind of corrupted them, and I would love for Feather to just have this Feather Aurelia grudge match. I think that'd be really, really dope. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I have a thing. I will be guesting on one of my friend's streams. He's just getting it kind of up and going, and I'm going to be learning how to play Affinity this weekend on Sunday around 6 p.m. Pacific. Sorry. And you can find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/imagination88. That is IMAGINASIAN 88. So we'll be hanging out. We might draft Modern Masters. Should be a good time. So come support his stream and we will see you there.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Instagram at HalCanSan. I've been adding more food and dog pictures since it sounds like people like that. And if you'd like to watch the VODs for the modern stream that I was on over the weekend, you can go to twitch.tv/cardkingdom.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MEANMUGGER. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. Or on the stream this weekend on Sunday.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. My Snapchat is CryptoCommandWithKs. And I will be streaming on a regular basis starting April 24th. And I'll be doing that at twitch.tv/tokriz. And it'll be Mondays from 9 to 11 p.m. Central Standard Time and Fridays from 2:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. So if this sounds like something that will float your boat, please add me on Twitch, and I hope to deliver some sweet content.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love watching you stream. I feel like you have a really good, you're really patient, and you really seem like you don't get flustered by the chat, and you seem like you are really able to kind of, you know, relax and have a really good time, and I think you're going to be a hit.
Thanks. I'm trying.
I can learn from you. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAsterus. That's OriginalAoesterus. You can email me at OriginalAsterus@gmail.com. Twitch.tv/OriginalAsterus. I stream every Tuesday and Thursday evenings and sometimes on the weekends. The show is on Twitter at @TheGFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. And we come out every Friday on GatheringMagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening to us, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.